Hare Krishna. So today morning, we are discussing the Srimad Bhagavatam, the fourth canto, the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. So here, he has attained the spiritual world, and Srila Prabhupada explains two characteristics of the spiritual world, self-effulgence and selflessness. The spiritual world does not depend on anything external for illumination. And that those who attain the spiritual world are concerned about others. So the spiritual world is not just a matter of location. Sometimes you may say, okay, this is the map of India, this is the map of, say, China. The map is China. If you want to go from India to China, you move upwards. So like that, you may think the spiritual world, okay, this is the material world, this is the spiritual world. We need to go from here to there. And the spiritual world does not exist at the same level of reality as the material world. That's why going to the spiritual world is not a matter of physical transportation or physical relocation. It requires elevation of consciousness. So the spiritual world exists at another level of reality itself. And that level of reality is attained by attaining a level of consciousness. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur put this as, you cannot get crash into the kingdom of God. So you cannot say, I performed so much austerity, I did so much sadhana, therefore I am going to enter into the kingdom of God. Now we cannot immigrate into the kingdom of God. Actually we have to be invited there. It is when the doors open, only then we can enter over there. No matter what our endowments, they don't make us qualified. Actually, it's Krishna's mercy which makes us qualified. And Prabhupada explains that for going to the spiritual world, we need spiritual consciousness. And a simple way to understand the difference between material and spiritual consciousness is that who is the center? Am I the center? Or is the service Krishna, the service to Krishna, that is the center? So when we meet someone, if we think, what can this person do for me? That is material consciousness. If I think, what can I do for this person? That is spiritual consciousness. Now of course, in every relationship, there is reciprocation. So there is something that we contribute to that relationship, and it's something which they contribute. So there is reciprocation, no doubt. But the thrust is not taking, but giving. And that sense of service is manifested in this world also. And that is through, as Prabhupada says, compassion. That we try to share Krishna Bhakti with others. And Prabhupada himself is a prime example of this. Even at advanced age, he traveled tirelessly across the world to give Krishna to as many people as possible. So this concern about others rather than about oneself, this is actually the result of growth in spirituality. And you will see this happens even in the life of Dhruva. We are discussing the acronym Dhruva, D. So D, I talked about distress and direction. H, I said, talk about humility and honesty. So R, I talk about realization and reconciliation. That when Dhruva is just a small boy, right? He goes in the forest, performs immense austerities, and by the performance of those austerities, he gets the darshan of the Lord. That Lord in the supreme reality appears as a reality in front of his eyes. Realization means that which is a reality, we accept it to be a reality. We experience it to be a reality. So, Krishna is the supreme reality. But presently we do not experience Krishna directly so much. But when we experience Krishna, that is when realization comes. Bhakti pareshanubhava viraktir anyatracha. The process of bhakti, the Bhagavatam 11th canto says, is meant to give us paraishanubhava, experience of that Lord who is transcendental. So many people are interested in spiritual experiences. They say, oh, I went to this place. It feels so spiritual. I mean, this wasn't so spiritual. I feel so spiritual in the association of that person. That's good. The spiritual experiences, if we get them, they may prompt us to explore life's higher side. To understand that there is something more to life than the pursuit of wealth, sense enjoyment, power, pleasure, and other worldly things. So, that kind of spiritual experiences are good to have. But, the purpose of spirituality is not just to experience spirituality. It is to become situated at the spiritual level of reality. When people talk about spiritual experiences, their idea is, suddenly I experience something. But it is that spirituality is not just something which we experience, but spiritual level of reality is somewhere where we reside. And there is a process for going there. So that process is the process of Bhakti Yoga. So this is the material level of reality, this is the spiritual level of reality. Sometimes even when we are at the material level, somehow some experiences may come to us which may seem like spiritual. They are percolating down from there. That is wonderful when we get those experiences. But the purpose of those experiences is to inspire us to raise our consciousness upwards. And the test that we have experienced Krishna is that bhakti pareshanubhava viraktir anyatracha. Some people, they say, God is a delusion. The people who are not intelligent, people are sentimental, they imagine God to be in existence. However, God is not a delusion. The idea that God is a delusion is a delusion. Because God is the foundation of all existence. Some people ask, if God created everything, who created God? They think this is the ultimate unanswerable question. But the question, who created God, is reflective of fundamental ignorance of the conception of God. To ask who created God is like asking who made a circle circular. Who made a circle circular? No, a circle by definition is circular. So God by definition is the creator of everything. If God had a creator, then the creator of God would be God. So wherever this chain going backwards stops, that is God. Just like if a child reads a novel, then the child will know this character is the son of this person, this is the daughter of this person, this is their like lineage, this is all these characters. And finally after reading the novel, the child hears, oh, there's also an author. So, where is the author in the book? As I'm looking, pouring through the book from the first page to the last page. In the book, the author is not to be found. Especially if it's a fiction book. Then, or the story book. In the story book, the author is not to be found. The author exists at a different level of reality. The author is the source of the timeline, the plot, the characters, the dialogues, the setting, everything. But the author exists at a different level of reality. Similarly, God exists at a different level of reality. He exists beyond the chain of cause-effect that pervades this world. That's why the question, who created God, is self-contradictory. And God is not just real. We could say that He is realer than reality. What we consider as reality, what we are experiencing right now, this is one level of reality. But this is a temporary level of reality. And Krishna is a higher level. He is realer than what we consider as reality. He is the supreme reality. And the test that one has got experience of God, bhakti pareshanubhava, the test is that if you have got pareshanubhava, viraktir anyatracha, one becomes detached from other things. Because one feels that the experience of God is so fulfilling that why do I need anything else? Actually speaking, we could say that there can be an external symptom and an internal symptom of somebody being spiritually realized. The internal symptom is that they feel satisfied, they are happy. They are experiencing, they are having rich experiences within themselves. In the Bhagavad Gita also, Sanjaya says, but as I remember the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, I feel thrilled. पच्च संस्मृत्य संस्मृत्य रूपमत्यद्भुतं हरे विस्मयो मे महान् राजन् नश्यामि च पुनः पुनः अवश्यामि च मुहुर्मुहुः संवादमिम अश्रव्यम्. He says that thrilled at every moment, remembering the message of Krishna and remembering the form of Krishna. So that is thrill, that is the experience of Krishna. Prabhupada purports in that, if once we become conscious of Krishna, we experience life with the thrill at every moment. Now how do we know whether somebody is thrilled or not in thrill? We can't peek into their hearts, but we can see their actions. The actions would be, if they are so fulfilled internally, they will not crave for external things. And that will lead to, that will manifest as detachment. And this is what happened to Dhruva Maharaj. When he saw Krishna, when he saw the Supreme Lord, it was such an enriching, fulfilling experience for him, that he felt, what am I doing? Why did I ask for a kingdom? This sthana bilashi tapasisito. I came to your Lord, performed tapasya for getting sthana, for getting a kingdom. But now that I have seen you, I understand that kacham vichinvan api divyaratnam, that you, O Lord, are like a shining jewel and all worldly possessions are like broken pieces of glass. So I do not want any of these. Swamin krutarthasmi varam nayache. I am satisfied simply by saying I do not desire anything else. However, although the devotees don't want anything in this world, often Krishna wants the devotees to be glorified in this world. And therefore, Krishna made Dhruva Maharaj, gave him a magnificent kingdom. He enriched Dhruva Maharaj not just materially but also spiritually. However, see, normally in the material world, when we have been hurt by someone who is more powerful than us, then we feel very bitter, we feel very angry, we feel very vengeful. But at that time we may just be powerless, because those people are, that person is more powerful than us. But if in future the equations change, if we become more powerful than that person, then a normal human tendency is to use that power to hit back at that person. Now you thought you could do this to me, now I'll show you what I can do to you. Dhruva Maharaj had got such blessing and such power from Vishnu, but when he went back home, he just said, he just reconciled. He did not hold anything against his father, he did not hold anything against his stepmother, he did not hold anything against his stepbrother. His father was actually very aggrieved. He is, because for him everything happened so fast. His son was climbing up in his lap, and his wife pushed him down and spoke harsh words to him, and his son went away crying. Now all this happened so fast, he just couldn't think of what to do at that time. Normally within our hearts a tug of war goes on, that we all have certain attachments and we tend to act to take care of those things we are attached to. And things which are important for us in the matter of principles, in the matter of values. Now, when sudden situations come up, our consciousness gravitates towards our attachments, not towards our values. After some time, why did I do that? This was much more important. This is what I should have taken care of. So, our mind, which is attached, it pushes our consciousness towards our attachments. Whereas our intelligence, our conscience, these, they push us, they prompt us to go towards our values. So often, when sudden temptation comes, when sudden provocation comes, when sudden agitation comes, at that time, the first response is usually from our mind, the impulse. And then, that's why the first response is rarely the best response. When there is an argument between two people, and then we feel, you speak this, I will tell you, show you how well I can speak. It is said that words spoken in haste are regretted at leisure. We speak hastily and then for a long time we regret those words. So at that time it just happened so fast, just couldn't react. He said,
how can I displease my wife? She's so dear to me. But in the process, when his son ran away, he started feeling bad. When he found his son had gone, not ran out of the palace, but ran out of the kingdom, he felt mortified. He said, what have I done? I have driven my son out of my home. And then Narmuni came there and he told him, don't worry. Your son is an auspicious path. He is soon going to become famous. He is going to be celebrated in 3 worlds. And he felt that he grateful that what had happened was not a disaster, that his son was saved. And now, when Dhruva came back, he welcomed him joyfully. At one level, he was regretful about what had happened, but he was joyful that at least his son has come back. And Dhruva did not hold anything against his father. Why? Because let the past bygones be bygones. No, love does not keep a scoreboard of wrongs. You did this on that day, you did this on that day, you did this on that day. Now, if you start keeping a scoreboard of that, like that, then you know, it will impede our capacity to grow internally and to help the relationship grow. Yes, if somebody has hurt us, it will hurt us. But we have to look at the overall life of the person, and if we know that that was just an uncharacteristic response that happened under the pressure of some situation, we don't have to hold that against the person. So, his father, Dhanapada, had otherwise taken care of Dhruva. So, Dhruva did not hold it against him. And even his stepmother, she sought forgiveness and he forgave. Actually, the test of our spiritual advancement is that we don't hold past wrongs against people. Now, this doesn't mean that we can simply let others be in a position where they hurt us again. We have to be cautious about that. So, but if we see that others are also contrite, they are also remorseful, that they are apologetic, then we don't have to hold the past in between us and them. That reconciliation is what helps us move forward in life's journey in relationship with others. Sometimes in the life journey, sometimes we make some mistakes, sometimes others make some mistakes. And we all need to help each other. So that we should see each other's through, not that we see through each other. See through each other means you are apologizing, but actually it's all a show. Internally you are still the same person. And I'm not going to accept this show. So, if somebody apologizes, how do we know whether they are sincere or not? And even if they are not sincere, you know, we are not meant to judge people that way. So if somebody says, I apologize, I reject your apology. That is outrageous. If somebody is apologizing, you need to accept it. Yes, there is a situation where if that person has been repeatedly doing the same wrong thing, then we may not trust that person. That is fine. That is a simply a functional need because we have to protect ourselves. But in general, when we are in material consciousness, material things seem very big. This, you know, every material gain seems very big. Every material loss seems very big. But when we are in spiritual consciousness, Krishna himself is so big, he dwarfs everything else. So when we have Krishna with us, other things just don't matter. Other things just don't matter. Now suppose if somebody is playing a sports match, and during the sports match, say one fielder collides against another fielder, and they get a little injured. One fielder gets injured. Now both of them are trying to take a catch, and both of them hit each other. Now they will be injured, they will be annoyed, they will be angry. But eventually, if the player wins the man of the match award, the team wins the championship. Now that small collision, that small scratch, it just doesn't matter. So similarly, if say what happens if they lose the match, then everybody starts thinking, because of you that happened. But if somebody is winning and one is so delighted with the victory, that victory is so big that that small collision, it doesn't matter at all. So similarly, if we are conscious of Krishna, Krishna is so big and the remembrance of Krishna is so fulfilling that small upheavals, small frictions, that they don't matter so much.
another. That's why if we are taking small wrongs very seriously, then we have to check whether we are actually being conscious of Krishna. Or is it that we are not conscious of Krishna, and then we are trying to assert ourselves not by growing in bhakti, but by throwing our weight around material. But Guru Maharaj, he had no need to throw his weight around material. Although he had been given enormous power by the Lord, but he was satisfied. So, even Srila Prabhupada, when he came to India, at that time, he wanted his disciples to learn Indian culture, to learn Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and he introduced his disciples to some of his godbrothers. And unfortunately, some of them, they felt that some of the things Prabhupada was doing was different from what Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur were doing. And they started telling them that, you know, actually, if you want to really learn Gaudiya Vaishnavism, you want to love Krishna, you should come to us, learn from us. And at that time, Prabhupada became very, very protective. And he said, don't associate with them. Not with all his godbrothers, but some of them he said, don't associate with them. And then, there's one particular situation where one of his godbrothers tried to poison one of his disciples. And Prabhupada said, very strongly, he's like an envious snake. And then later on, Prabhupada told his disciples that, you know, I can say this, you can't say this. They are respectable for you, but keep a distance from them. Now this difference is something which we may not be able to understand. So eventually when that godbrother passed away, sometimes devotees get a perverse pleasure in condemning those whom they consider non-devotees. So when their godbrother passed away, the devotees came and asked, what, Prabhupada, where did he go? He called him an envious snake. Where did he go? Did he go to hell? That was their idea. Prabhupada said, he went back to Godhead. He said, my spiritual master is very powerful and he served my spiritual master. So what does this mean? That at one level, if Prabhupada calls him an envious snake and Prabhupada says, went back to Godhead, how can somebody's envious go back to Godhead? What we have to understand is there are statements which are sometimes made in context. And those statements are meant to be seen in context. Now, say if a child is very restless and the child goes out of the house, keeps running away, the mother may tell the child, you know, outside there are kidnappers, don't go out. Go out only with me, stay at home. And mother may say, you see that man walking around? That person may be a kidnapper, don't go there. Now, if the child goes and tells that person, you are a kidnapper. My mother says you are a kidnapper. But that is not the purpose. The mother's statement is meant to protect the child. So, the protection of the child, when that is the purpose, then certain statements are made in that context. They are not absolute statements, you have to be seen outside the context. So, Prabhupada respected his godbrothers. When he actually started the Krishna Consciousness Movement, he wanted his godbrothers to come and also join with him and preach and share Krishna Consciousness all over the world. And before he departed from the world, his godbrothers came to see him and he apologized to them. He says, during the course of preaching, sometimes you have to speak strongly. So if I have spoken anything wrong, please forgive me. So Prabhupada said, I am a fallen soul. He said, I am Mahapatita, I am very fallen. And his godbrothers were also gracious. He says, Swamiji, they would call Prabhupada, we call it Swami Maharaj. Swami Maharaj, you are not Mahapatit, you are Mahapatit Pavan. You are the great deliverer of fallen souls. So, there may be conflicts in particular situations which arise because of those situations. And in those situations, certain things are spoken. There is no need to take them as absolute statements out of context and label people accordingly. So reconciliation requires that we keep small things small. And Dhruva was able to do that. And because of that, he was able to move forward. That was actually, in a sense, the test of his Krishna consciousness. That he kept small things small. So I'll quickly go to the next two parts. I won't be able to elaborate fully. You and he. So realization led to reconciliation. There was U is upheaval. even when somebody has seen the Lord, even when somebody has exhibited pure devotion, such that they are able to reject a flourishing kingdom for the sake of the Lord, even for them, the world is a place of upheavals. And when upheavals come up, the world is a place of upheavals, the world is a place of ugliness. And in that ugliness, when we see the harshness, the cruelty, the terrible thing that happened in the world, that can cause an upheaval even in our consciousness. So although Dhruva Maharaj was a pure devotee, but when he heard that the Yakshas had killed his brother, he got so angry that he went on a rampage and started attacking all the Yakshas to annihilate them practically. And then there had to be higher intervention. And they told him, Dhruva Maharaj, Manu came and said, don't kill all the Yakshas. No, there's only one of them who killed your brother. And then immediately he regained his perspective. So, in this world, the nature of the world is that kama, krodha, lobha, these can come. For a devotee, it is not that they will not affect. But even if they affect, it's very temporary. If one is devoted to Krishna, then even if the force of impulse comes, then the force of impulse might direct us away. But soon, the Krishna consciousness comes back. Either from within us, through the voice of conscience, the super soul will speak and tell us, hey, this is not the right thing to do. Or, outside some guidance will come. And we will be able to take that guidance. So it's, even when somebody is very advanced, sometimes just the force of the situation may cause some shaking. So Dhruva Maharaj is not considered, the Bhagavatam in that sense actually does not idealize its characters. Now, it describes characters who also, they are very transcendental, but at the same time, it also describes them in human situations. And in those human situations, they go through different emotions. When Prabhupada came to India, after he had established the conscious movement in 1976, One reporter, ISKCON had become very big at that time. So one reporter asked him, Prabhupada, journalist asked, Swamiji, many movements which have been started by a founder, after the founder departs, they collapse. So what do you think will happen to your movement? So Prabhupada then, why are you discouraging me? No, Swamiji, I'm not discouraging you. I'm just asking a question. But your question is discouraging. So, now, you may say, Prabhupada, can Prabhupada get discouraged? Prabhupada was such a person that even when he was all alone, when he went to America, no single person was there with him. You know, he had no monetary support, he had no institutional support, he had no assistant, he had nothing. He had so many sources of discouragement around him, still Prabhupada was determined and persevered. So they say, how can Prabhupada get discouraged? But the point is that discouragement as an emotion may come. Prabhupada would sometimes write a report to his disciples, or if a disciple would give some preaching reports, he would reply. And he would say that, you know, these are so encouraging reports. And as Prabhupada told one of the disciples doing excellent book distribution behind the Soviet bloc at that time. He told him that, you know, your reports are keeping me alive. So, naturally, there are emotions. And there can be, if success comes, there will be encouragement. If some failure or reversal or obstacle comes, there will be disheartenment. But those emotions don't determine our devotion. Emotions are natural. We will sometimes feel encouraged, sometimes feel discouraged. But our devotion goes on. Our bhakti goes on amidst encouragement or amidst discouragement. So, even if there is some upheaval, because of the ugliness of the world, because of the harshness of the world, we don't have to make that into a big issue. For a moment it happens, and then it goes off. When Srila Prabhupada was in his final days very sick, he had a very protracted and painful illness. Sometimes it would seem to recover, sometimes it would seem not recover. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj has written a whole book about it called TKG's Diary. And then he described that sometimes, you know, once when the doctor had given hope that you'll get cured, and Prabhupada started taking the medicine and started feeling better,
He seemed to be recovering. And he was recovering. And then suddenly, one night, it was a very bad night, and his health became worse than previously. Not even before recovery, but even before the sickness. So at that time, Mahakrishna Maharaj said, Prabhupada said, why is this happening? Now, you may say that, but this Prabhupada does not have faith in Krishna. Maybe they ask, why is this happening? Sometimes we get this question. We say, I am a sadhaka. I don't know why is this happening. But what about a pure devotee? Actually, when Prabhupada is asking, why is this happening? Prabhupada himself explains in a purport that a devotee may be perplexed, but a devotee is never discouraged. Discouraged in this context means one feels, I don't want to practice bhakti. Perplexed means that we don't know how to practice bhakti. Okay, so Prabhupada, this is why this is happening is, Prabhupada at that time, should I try to continue this battle and live on, or should I just leave this body? What does Krishna want? Krishna's plan is revealed to a devotee in different ways at different stages. When Prabhupada said that I can see the temple side, only time is separating. Now that was his faith, and the faith gave him that vision. But it is not that Prabhupada knew, okay, this person is going to become a devotee, this person is not going to become a devotee, this person is going to be a great disciple of mine, this person will take his sin and follow me. It's not Prabhupada said clearly that only Krishna is omniscient. A devotee is not omniscient. So Prabhupada also had to make decisions. Should I do this? Should I do that? And sometimes there can be confusion at that time. So this actually is the aspect of Srila Prabhupada wherein his purpose is transcendental, but at the same time that transcendental purpose is being executed in this world. And when it is executed in this world, then we have to see that actually that purpose remains transcendental, and occasionally there might be some ups and downs. So now, this way, when we see that the material is incidental to the essence of a devotee. The material is incidental, it's a circumstantial. The essence of a devotee is the purpose to serve Krishna. And last one is V is Vaikuntha, where Dhruva Maharaj is going now. That is the V is also public. You know, he ultimately attains the victory by going to Vaikuntha. So, how does Dhruva Maharaj ultimately go to the spiritual world? He lives a life of devotion, and at the end of that life, the celestial airplane, the transcendental airplane comes. And not only does it come for him, it comes for his mother also. Because she has guided him to Krishna. So for a devotee, if the devotee pursues the service of Krishna lifelong, then it is Krishna's part. Krishna will elevate us directly to the spiritual world, or it will take us to a place where we can move forwards, ultimately to attain the spiritual world. So for us, Krishna is not just a destination in the future. It is not that for Prabhupada, Krishna was some person who was to be attained in the future. Krishna was always with him. But Dhruva Maharaj had already seen Krishna. He was living in the presence of the Lord. So, for a devotee, the victory at one level is that we attain Krishna when we go back to the spiritual world. That is called as Videha Mukti. Videha means the body is given up and will become liberated. But even before that, there is another form of Mukti which is called as Jivan Mukti. Jivan Mukti means we may be in this world, but you are not bound to this world. Iha Yasya Dasya Karmana Masavira Nihila Sopyavasthasu Jivan Muktaha Sauchate. That if one is fully serving Krishna in this world, then it is as good as that person is liberated. So liberation is only a matter of time. So for us, sometimes we start thinking, oh, you know, when I die, how will I die? Will I go back to Krishna? What will happen if I die like this? What will happen if I die like that? Sometimes you may hear of some devotees dying in some distresses, some accidents or something like that. So at one level, it's a normal human apprehension. But another level, we have to understand that we go back to Krishna not just when we die and when we remember Krishna at death. We can be with Krishna right now. I started this talk by saying about how the spiritual world is not just
a place where we have to relocate ourselves. It's a level of consciousness we are dealing with. And in that sense, Krishna is very close to us. Even if somebody hugs us tightly, that person cannot be as close to us as Krishna. Now, how far is Krishna from us? He's just one thought away. He's just one thought away. Right now, if we think of Krishna, we are with him. He's always with us, but our thoughts are away from him. So, if we direct our thoughts towards him, we are with him. And that means if we strive just now to keep our thought with Krishna. Let me keep this thought with Krishna. Let me keep the next thought with Krishna. If we just strive for that, we don't have to worry about the future so much. What will happen in future when if this happens, if that happens? You know, Krishna will take care of that. No, we just have to take care of the present moment. Whatever has happened in the past for us, that is, it may be good, it may be bad, but that is all a part of Krishna's plan for our spiritual evolution. What is going to happen in the future, that also is in Krishna's control. He will take care of that. All that we have to take care of is the present. If you take care of the present moment, we take it and offer it to Krishna. Then, if you just keep doing this, the future will be taken care of. Dhruva Maharaj went back to Godhead, not just because at the moment of his death, the Vaikuntha airplane came and he ascended over there and he went back. He went back to his Godhead, because he lived a life devoted to Krishna. The Bhagavatam sometimes gives demonstrations of how somebody dies in a dramatically devotional way. And that means the Vaikuntha airplane comes and takes them back to Vaikuntha. But the Bhagavatam is candid. Such a thing may not happen all the time. The hero of the Bhagavatam, apart from Krishna, of course, is Parikshit. Parikshit Maharaj is here in the Bhagavatam. And Parikshit Maharaj's death doesn't seem to be materially dramatic. He renounces the whole world. He devotes himself to Vishnu, fasts from food and water for 7 days, hears the Bhagavatam. And what happens? Finally, a snake bird comes and bites him. And as soon as the snake bird bites him, his body explodes in fire. Body erupts with fire. And he perishes. But Acharya explained that even before the takshak comes, that snake bird comes, Parikshit has already gone to the spiritual world. Because he has heard the Bhagavatam, he has absorbed himself in Krishna, and he has attained Krishna. So, the whole Bhagavatam is meant to help Parikshit Maharaj attain Krishna. And the Bhagavatam is candid in depicting that no Vaikuntha airplane comes to take Parikshit back to Vaikuntha. But Parikshit Maharaj goes back to Vaikuntha. So, how death occurs, the Bhagavatam depicts both a dramatically devotional way and a materially jarring way. How death occurs is not important. How we live is more important. If we live in a devotional way, then however we die, we will go towards Krishna. Because we have given our life to Krishna, and then Krishna has no reason to keep us in this world. If before we die, our love for Krishna becomes greater than our love for this world, then Krishna will take us out of this world and take us to his eternal abode. So I'll summarize. I spoke about how Dhruva Maharaj gained the realization of Krishna, and thereby, with that realization, he reconciled with his mother, with all those whom he remains estranged. So I talk about realization means that which is a reality, we understand to be a reality. Bhakti is not just about getting a spiritual experience, but rising to a spiritual realization. That means realizing the spiritual level of reality to be the ultimate reality. Krishna is realer than reality. Those who think Krishna to be an illusion, a product of the mind, those who ask God, who created God, you don't understand the definition of God itself. Asking that question like asking who made a circle, it's intrinsic, the definition itself. So then, the internal test of realization of Krishna is inner satisfaction. And the outer test is external renunciation. So Dhruva Maharaj, he was so internally enriched that he said, I don't want the kingdom.
But Krishna gave that kingdom. And when he came back, he did not try to get even with those who had hurt him. Uttanapad, he was a principled person, but at that time, in the heat of the moment, turned out his attachment surfaced to him. So for us, we have our values and we have our attachments. Our attachments may mislead us, but if we are overall in a principled way, our values will resurface and they will help us come back on the right track. And then I talked about how Dhruva Maharaj, he did not hold any grudges against any of the elders, those who had hurt him. So similarly, when we are enriched with Krishna, that joy is so great that any hurt that we may have got, they become incidental, like a small collision in a match after the World Cup has been won. The joy is so great at that time. So we can keep small things small and focus on the big thing, the ultimate big thing, that is Krishna. I talked about the ugliness of this world, which can lead to upheavals temporarily even in a devotee's life. Dhruva Maharaj got angry when his brother was killed. But because his life was devoted to Krishna, when the anger started leading to ugly expressions, immediately there was higher intervention, guidance, and he reconciled. So similarly, circumstantially, certain emotions may come up within us. But for a devotee, those emotions don't divert them from the path of devotion. Devotee may be perplexed, but a devotee is not discouraged in the sense of giving up. That never happens. In discussion about Prabhupada, there were the emotions that came in the situation, and there was a purpose that was transcendental to the situations. And then I talked about Vaikuntha. Going to Vaikuntha is not just a matter of relocating to a place. It is a matter of getting a particular consciousness. And that consciousness is the consciousness of absorption in Krishna. Spiritual consciousness means we put the other person first. It is a consciousness of service. Service to Krishna and service to all living beings in relationship with Krishna. And rather than worrying about how we may die and where we go after death, we can focus on how we are living, where our consciousness is going right now. At every moment, Krishna is just one thought away from us. The past may have had terrible things, but Krishna will integrate that past into a plan for our spiritual evolution. The future is uncertain, but in the future, Krishna is in charge and he will take care of the future. We just have to take care of the present and offer it to Krishna. If we keep doing that, then in the future, no matter how we die, whether it's like Dhruva Maharaj or Vaikuntha Captain coming, or it's Parikshit Maharaj, the body burning because of snake bite, it doesn't matter. We will still attain Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments? Yes, please.
In the beginning of the But in the purport, Prabhupada says that entrance into Vaikuntha, or going back home, back to what it is dependent on unselfishness. And he mentions that serving others.
Yeah.
Right? you enter as
invited, agrees.
After an invitation comes. So there must have been a shift in driven consciousness. As the Prabhupada mentions in the book, that shift is the kindness concern for the welfare of others.
Yeah.
So how did Dhruva Maharaj display or demonstrate in his lifetime after his what it is to be his own endeavor?
That's true. Yes. Right? Yeah.
As a consequence of that, then what kind of attitude should we have in pursuing our spiritual life? Because it's pursuit, you have to do something.
Mm.
But it shouldn't be that we do it selfishly, actually. It should be done in a proper manner. So what is that? What was Dhruva Maharaj? What was the change in Dhruva Maharaj? And how do we recognize that? That
yeah.
such that he got an invitation that wasn't by his own endeavor.
Yeah,
and still we have to endeavor. So, what's the right endeavor?
Yeah, thank you.
How does that sound?
Yes, thank you. So, Dhruva Maharaj started off with a selfish motive, but to attain Vaikuntha, we need to be selfless. So, when did that transition from selfishness to selflessness happen? And similarly, he started off his own endeavor. By his endeavor, he got the darshan of Vishnu. But we need grace. So, how much is the role of endeavor, and what is the role of grace? How should we endeavor in our spiritual life? Yeah, it's a thought-provoking question. I'd say 2-3 thoughts, and maybe you can also add. I'm sure you also have some thoughts about it. The first point would be that there is some starting impetus. And whatever it is, initially, yena kena prakarena mana krishna nivesha. Somehow or other, fix the mind on Krishna. Akama sarva kama va moksha kama udharati. Tivrena bhakti yogena yeta purusham param. Whether with material desires or no material desires, or with a desire for liberation, just start worshipping Hari. So the initial starting purpose doesn't matter so much if we are ready to change the purpose afterwards. And the most dramatic change that happens in Dhruva Maharaj is when he has the darshan of Vishnu. He has come there for the kingdom. But then, I don't want the kingdom. There's a devotee in Mumbai, he's a disciple of Prabhupada. He was a thief before he came to Krishna consciousness. And he saw a picture of Prabhupada wearing a Rolex watch. He thought, Swami, I can steal that watch from him. And then he came and Prabhupada was not there at that time. He just came and stayed there in the temple for some time. The devotees would just do some service. I started doing some service. Waiting, when will Swami come? When will Swami come? And then I stayed with devotees chanting Hare Krishna. And he started practicing bhakti. And the day Prabhupada came, because he was a new person there, the devotees introduced him to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada himself took out his watch and gave it. And he said, I don't want this Prabhupada. So, the transition happened. So now, how did that happen? Because when he got the darshan of the Lord, there was a higher taste. And that higher taste, a higher understanding, he said, this is better. I don't want this. So that is a very conscious decision that he made. So selflessness and selfishness can be both dispositions and decisions. Some of us, maybe, and for almost all of us, may be selfishly disposed. In the sense that we think of ourselves first. But when a conscious juncture comes in, an important juncture comes in our life, we may simply act according to disposition or we may take a different decision. So he took that decision. We took that decision to turn towards the Lord. The Bhagavatam also describes how Pururava, when he lost Urvashi, he became so agitated that he performed a yajna to please Vishnu. And then Vishnu came in front of him, and although Vishnu is supremely attractive, his mind was still filled with the attractiveness of Urvashi. Told her, I want Urvashi. And then that's what he got, and Vishnu went away. So in his case, even when he saw Vishnu, his attachment was so strong that it did not change him. However, the darshan of Vishnu did not go in vain. Later on, when again Urvashi left him and he was frustrated, that frustration inspire him to go towards devotion. So we have to make that decision. When we are practicing bhakti, all we may have at present some selfish motive. That, you know, I want to be famous, I want to be appreciated, I want people to follow me, whatever. I want some position. But there is also the desire to serve Krishna. Most, if somebody had been 100% selfish, they would not be in bhakti. Because that they could, they have followed the rules and regulations which involve a certain amount of giving up selflessness. But to be 100% selfless, it takes a lot of effort. So we will do the service normally in whatever level of consciousness we have. We can't artificially imagine that I am at a selfless level. We will do it the way we do it. But there will be certain crossroad that we will come to. At that time, what do we choose? Do we choose a selfish or a self-centered alternative? Or do we choose a selfless alternative? And those will determine our trajectory. So, our consciousness change happens gradually, also just by the practice of bhakti. But it is sometimes manifested dramatically at particular moments. Just like every morning when the sunrise is a gradual event. But if you are doing japa and chanting and walking, suddenly one day the sun has risen. Our realization that the sun has risen happens at one particular moment. Although the sun is rising constantly. Similarly, by the practice of bhakti, the journey from selfishness to selflessness is automatically happening. But there are certain moments when we become aware, when we make a conscious choice, which we might not have been able to make earlier. So Dhruva Maharaj, his motive was selfish, but when he saw the Lord, he chose the selfless option rather than the selfish option. And as far as his own endeavor was concerned, it was not just his own endeavor, because he was directed by Narada Muni. Narada Muni instructed him, do this, and he did accordingly. So, endeavor is very important on the path of bhakti. Srila Prabhupada himself endeavored so much. He traveled in old age, he stayed awake or woke up early in the mornings to write his books. He was tireless in his effort to share Krishna bhakti with the world. So we understand that our endeavor alone doesn't bring the results. But we need to endeavor to show Krishna that we want to offer him the results. Arjuna also practiced tirelessly for becoming an expert archer. And then he could use that archer in Krishna's service. So whichever service we are doing, we need to endeavor wholeheartedly in that service. Only when we endeavor wholeheartedly, we show Krishna our diligence. And the endeavor itself does not produce the result, but the endeavor shows Krishna that we want the result. Prabhupada gave an example. Once he was going on a morning walk, and there was a man who was feeding some ducks in a pond. And those ducks were quacking, and he was throwing some food to them. And there was one duck that was quacking very loudly. And the duck was quacking very loudly. And this man was giving more food to that duck. So Prabhupada said, we should be like that duck. The duck's quacking itself does not produce the food. The duck's quacking does not necessarily compel the man to give that more food to him. But the duck's quacking shows the eagerness and the man will reciprocate. So similarly, our endeavor is showing Krishna that we want his mercy. If we think our endeavor alone produces spiritual advancement, then that is a misunderstanding. And sometimes we may just make a full plan. I'm going to study Shastra, I'm going to chant attentively. And we make a full plan and still our mind wanders all over the universe. Just not able to, so many things happen, we're not able to study Shastra, we're not able to do what we want to do. Even if we are able to do it externally, internally our consciousness doesn't stay focused. But sometimes, we may have had a stressful day, or we're not having any spiritual consciousness. We start chanting and we get absorbed. Sometimes we study Shastra and we just feel, I just want to do other things. Sometimes we study Shastra and we get absorbed in it. So why does this difference happen? Actually, it is not our endeavor is important, but Krishna's mercy also comes into picture. So, nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavat sevaya bhagvati uttam shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. In that purport, Prabhupada explains that just the mechanical activity of hearing and chanting also wards off samanarthas. But not everything. The full transformation happens when it is not mechanical, but it is devotional. So we invest our consciousness in it. So when we invest our consciousness, Krishna reciprocates and He reveals Himself to us. So for us, our endeavor is to try to keep ourselves in Krishna consciousness. Now try to be in devotional activities, be in devotional association. Try as much as possible to have a devotional disposition. But ultimately it is Krishna who will attract us. And when Krishna attracts us, then the inner struggle ceases. Till the point Krishna reveals His mercy, we show our endeavor by our struggle to focus on Krishna. But when Krishna has His mercy, the inner struggle ceases and we become spontaneously attracted to it. Does that answer the question? You want to comment something, please?
Prabhupada makes a comment that, or makes a point that